Hip Maria, oh wah, oh wah, oh wah. Oh, I hit it. Maria, oh wah, oh wah, oh Maria, oh wah, oh wah. Yeah. Maria, oh wah, oh wah, oh Maria, oh wah, oh.
You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today we will speak live with Jamie Quinn, the executive director of the Fire Museum in Hudson, about their upcoming Dalmatian Day this weekend. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after Troy's Jason Martin finishes singing this song, and then it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. Stream runs through. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood.
Turn out for a special performance from Leah Bertucci Sunday, September 18th at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Bertucci is performing on electronics, voice samples, and multi-channel radio using four low-range FM transmitters provided from Wavefarm and used to send audio throughout the performance to radios installed within the labyrinth walls of Opus 40 to create a spatialized sonic gesture. Audience members are urged to circulate among the Opus 40 grounds to hear, to make their own live mix of the performance. Bertucci is working with Ben Vita, Zach Layton, and Victoria Keddy on the project. It's Sunday, September 18th, from 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochran Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Luke Parsnow at Spectrum News reports that New York Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos
is taking a personal leave to help the humanitarian effort in Ukraine. He made this announcement on Twitter on September 19th. Not saying exactly how long he would be out of office, Sagos wrote, and I quote, "We all must do our part keeping Ukrainians safe during this brutal war and support democracy wherever it's imperiled," end quote. While Sagos is gone, Executive Deputy Commissioner Sean Mahar and Chief of Staff Erica Ringwald will be in charge of the department. Sagos has held the job since 2015. Russia invaded Ukraine 7 months ago and recently lost much of the territory it took from Ukraine in the invasion. Read more about this story at Spectrum News.
Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that paramedic and former Greene County legislator Aidan O'Connor has been appointed to a statewide task force charged with addressing the challenges faced by rural ambulance services. O'Connor will join the 12-member New York State Rural Ambulance Services Task Force formed under a bill advanced by State Senator Michelle Hinchey. The task force was established to study and evaluate the difficulties rural ambulance services are faced with, leading to staffing shortages and the potential closure of rescue squads. O'Connor is the Greene County EMS leader, and he will aid the task force in making recommendations to the state legislature about policies, programs, funding, and legislation to shore up rural ambulance services and help ensure their long-term viability. O'Connor has served as EMS coordinator for Greene County, chair of the Greene County EMS Council, president of Greene County Paramedics, and advocacy coordinator for the National Association of EMTs. He has also been on the board of directors for the Regional Emergency Medical Organization and has been a member of the State Emergency Medical Advisory Committee and co-chair of the Greene County Ambulance Task Force. O'Connor has been served as critical care flight paramedic. He is currently a member of the senior leadership team at Air Methods and a paramedic with the Greene County EMS. Quote, "I'm honored for the opportunity to serve at a time so vital for our EMS providers, EMS organizations, and the patients and communities we serve," unquote, O'Connor said. Quote, "I wholeheartedly believe the importance of transport medicine. We know that EMS in New York State can and will be a best practice model for the nation," unquote. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
Leanne Caldwell and Theodore Meyer explain in the Washington Post the possible reasons Representative Elise Stefanik announced last week she would run again for the position of House Republican Conference Chair. That would be giving herself a demotion if Republicans retake the House of Representatives, as they expect to. Stefanik would move down from the number 3 spot in the House GOP leadership to the number 4 in the hierarchy if Republicans are in the majority. Why? 3 other Republicans recently announced they would run for the number 3 spot as White House whip. So she would face more competition than for conference chair, the position she now has, with Representative Byron Donalds from Florida as the only competition. And being whip means you have to build consensus between moderate and conservative Republicans, which is not Stefanik's specialty these days. One senior Republican aide said of the whip position, and I quote, "It's going to be a really, really difficult job," end quote. As conference chair, and I quote, "You're just lobbing bombs at the administration," end quote. And just lobbing bombs at the administration is what Stefanik is doing now, and makes her better suited to become a vice presidential candidate for someone such as former President Donald Trump if he runs again in 2024. A source close to Stefanik said, and I quote, "Trump has encouraged Stefanik to run again, and he is very happy with the job she's done," end quote. Read the full story in the Washington Post.
Chris Bragg reports in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul insists that when her administration paid a vendor $637 million for COVID-19 tests, she was unaware that that vendor was a campaign donor. Quote, "I was not aware that this was a company that had been supportive of me," unquote, Hochul told reporters in July. Quote, "I don't keep track of that. My team, they have no idea," unquote. But a month before her administration struck the deals, records show, the company's founder threw an in-person campaign fundraiser for Hochul. According to her campaign disclosure forms, the November 22nd fundraiser was thrown by Charlie Tabelli, founder of Digital Gadgets LLC. A month later, the company would receive $637 million in payments from the state government to facilitate the purchase of 52 million at-home rapid coronavirus tests. Hazel Crampton Hayes, spokesperson for Hochul, said recently the governor was not involved in day-to-day procurement decisions. Quote, she simply instructed her team to purchase as many available tests as possible to meet the tremendous need across the state. As we have always said, campaign donations do not have any influence on government decisions, and we reject any implication otherwise, unquote, Crampton Hayes said. The Tabilly family has donated nearly $300,000 to Hochul's campaign, and Tabilly has thrown her two campaign fundraisers, one a month before the purchase orders were executed and one on April 10th, 2 weeks after the payments were complete. According to Digital Gadgets, Tabilly never spoke to the Hochul campaign about providing the COVID-19 test. The company declined to say how it came into contact with the Hochul administration concerning the sale. The governor's campaign declined to answer questions about any interaction between its staff or the governor with the company. In November, a younger member of the Tabilly family began working as a paid intern for Hochul's campaign fundraising staff. In mid-December, Hochul's campaign made its first payment to James Tabilly, an undergraduate at New York University. He was later hired to fill a full-time staff position as a campaign, quote, finance associate, unquote. Read the full story in the Times Union.
News 10 Albany reports that incumbent Democrat Paul Tonko has proposed a WMHT debate for the 20th Congressional District election this fall, and Republican challenger Liz Joy wants multiple debates. Joy said, and I quote, I'm looking forward to debating Paul, and our campaign is currently in discussions with multiple organizations that have proposed debates, including WMHT. Unlike Paul Tonko, who in 2020 refused to debate me when over 100 business owners requested a forum, we need to hear directly from Paul as to why he supports policies that are making New York unaffordable and unsafe with skyrocketing crime and weak borders allowing deadly fentanyl to flow into the country, end quote. Because of Joy's participation in the rally in Washington, D.C., January 6, 2021, Tonko seems eager to debate this fall. Tonko said on Wednesday, and I quote, those running for the People's House should be held to account and open to public scrutiny. My opponent organized a bus trip to the Capitol on January 6th, where police officers died and insurrectionists tried to overturn an election. She has also expressed support for total abortion bans, even in cases of rape and incest. These are extreme views that are well out of touch with Capital Region voters, and they deserve to be scrutinized, end quote. So far, there are no specifics, except using the local public television station WMHT as a venue. See the News 10 website for more details on this story.
Patricia Doxey reports for the Daily Freeman that Dutchess County Clerk Bradford Kendall is urging county lawmakers to create a domestic partnership registry for unmarried county residents living in close, committed, financially interdependent relationships. Kendall said the measure could ensure that unmarried couples who have been in long-term relationships are afforded rights, including hospital visitation rights and the right to participate in medical decision-making. He said the need for such a registry has become more apparent since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, we get more and more calls to the office asking for a domestic partner registry, unquote, Kendall said, adding that, quote, virtually every county south of us, unquote, offers the registry. Under state law, domestic partners that can provide satisfactory documentation showing they live together and are financially interdependent and meet the criteria outlined in the affidavit of domestic partnership. Domestic partners can be of the same or opposite gender. The five boroughs of New York City and Suffolk, Westchester, Putnam, and Rockland counties provide domestic partner registries, Kendall said. The county legislature previously considered establishing a registry in 2003 and 2007. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days.
Well, on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 77 degrees. Wednesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. with a temperature low of around 58 degrees. And on Thursday, showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 11 a.m. Otherwise, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 68 degrees. And Thursday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 44 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
On Wednesday, September 21st, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll speak live with Jamie Quinn, the executive director of the Firefighters Museum in Hudson, about their upcoming Dalmatian Day. And at 10 a.m., it's time for Matthew O'Neill's Panther Mountain Sound Show, a new show on WGXC that features indigenous music and more. At 11 a.m., Mayuka Fujino is live in Acre with her Mirage Station radio show. And at noon, we head to Catskill with the Bedazzled Radio Hour with Spike Priggen from Spike's Record Rack on Main Street in Catskill. At 4 p.m., we have a live interview with Maggie Hazen from the Columbia Collective about their show Talking Back, Artist of the Columbia Collective, which is at Foreland in Catskill through September 25th. At 7 p.m., it's time for Off the Hook live from Brooklyn, simulcast from WBAI. It's the Hacker Quarterly 2600 show, all about technology and more. And at 8, we're live from Hudson with Rock and Roll High School and Peter McPartland at Anya Kanovskaya. At 10 p.m., we're live from Ulster County with Jeff Economy and his Snack Point Charlie show. And then we stay live in Ulster County for two more hours after midnight with Peter Aaron's Go Go Kitty show, simulcast on Radio Kingston and WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Turn out or tune in to two of the world's greatest percussionists performing in Catskill at the Avalon Lounge on October 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Composers and percussionists Tatsuya Nakatani and Bobby Previtt perform with a live web stream at wgxc.org. Turn out or tune in for Tatsuya Nakatani and Bobby Previtt performing at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Sunday, October 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Find out more in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Name, Patty Boom. Host of Vinyl Freedom. Where? WGXC. When? Every first and third Tuesday from 12:10 to 2 p.m. What? Streaming online at WGXC.org. What? Tune in for a genre shakedown. All kinds of choice cuts of wax for you and yours to listen to. Dig it.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Report. We start each Renewable Weather Report with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. Citgo in South Cairo has gas for $3.69 a gallon, according to the Gas Buddy website, and that's the lowest price there. The air quality forecast is an 18, down from a 28 on Tuesday, both in the good range. The UV index is up to a 5 from 3 on Tuesday, and 5 is in the moderate range. National Weather Service in Albany says Wednesday should be mostly sunny, good for those local solar panels, with a high of 76 and a southeast wind around 6 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Wednesday night, there is a 70% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 a.m. Cloudy skies and low around 57. The rain is predicted to continue on Thursday. with a high of 67 and a northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts as high as 21 miles per hour for those windmills. Thursday night, the sky should be partly cloudy with a low around 42 and a northwest wind around 9 miles per hour with gusts as high as 22 miles per hour. And Friday should be mostly sunny with a high of 54 and a low around 41. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Solar-powered radio for open ears.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of David Gorin of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You should come visit. We have a beautiful shoreline.
President Joe Biden was asked about Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' threat to fly migrants to his home state of Delaware. The White House says it is working with local officials to prepare for the potential flight, which comes a week after DeSantis flew 48 migrants from Texas to Martha's Vineyard. House Democratic Caucus Chair Hakeem Jeffries slammed DeSantis and the Republican governors of Texas and Arizona, who have transported more than 10,000 migrants to Democratic cities.
They should start behaving like governors and stop behaving like human traffickers. They are putting politics over people in the most egregious way possible.
DeSantis, however, argued sanctuary cities should have to bear the brunt of what he called the Biden administration's open border policies.
Those migrants were being treated horribly by Biden. They were hungry, homeless. They had no opportunity at all. The state of Florida, it was volunteer, offered transport to sanctuary jurisdictions.
More than 2 million migrant encounters, a record, have been recorded so far this fiscal year. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin questioned what he called revenge politics amid a bipartisan attempt to block his plan to expedite fossil fuel permitting in a stopgap funding bill.
I've been around for a long time in state politics and federal politics. I've never seen stranger bedfellows than Bernie Sanders and the extreme liberal left siding up with the Republican leadership in the caucus. I've never seen this happen.
Democratic leaders and the president agreed to include the permitting package in return for his support of the Inflation Reduction Act. Former President Donald Trump's lawyers asked a federal appeals court to continue the delay of the DOJ's criminal investigation into classified documents kept at his Florida home. In a filing Tuesday, Trump's lawyers argued he had the power to assert executive privilege over documents currently in possession of the Biden administration. The Judicial Conference is calling for increased security for judges just a few months after the assassination attempt against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The federal court system's policymaking body also announced an extension of its pandemic-related policy, allowing for teleconferencing for civil and bankruptcy court proceedings. Charges were announced against 47 people accused of stealing $250 million from a federal program designed to provide meals for children in need during the pandemic. U.S. Attorney Andrew Luger said the defendants created a network of shell companies connected to the Minnesota-based nonprofit Feeding Our Future.
The scheme that began with a simple idea in March of 2020 grew to become the largest pandemic fraud in the United States.
Prosecutors say few meals were actually served and accused the defendants of purchasing luxury cars, property, and jewelry with the money. The FDA says it was poorly equipped to take effective action on the widespread baby formula outages this spring. In a new report, the agency points to outdated product tracking systems, inability to quickly address whistleblower complaints, and a lack of authority to address shortages. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And I'm Tom Rowe, live in the WGXC Morning Show. And now we have on the phone with us Jamie Quinn, the executive director of the Firefighters Museum in Hudson. And she's going to tell us all about Dalmatian Day, which is this Saturday. Is that right, Jamie?
That's correct. Saturday.
What is Dalmatian Day?
Well, Dalmatian Day was the museum's creation to come up with a way to entice children to learn more about fire safety and prevention. And, of course, children love animals, and the animal most associated with the fire service is the Dalmatian. So we decided to invite a bunch of Dalmatians to the museum in hopes that it would attract children, and then we could teach them fire prevention through games and crafts and shows. So It's actually grown into the largest one-day fire prevention event in New York State, possibly in the country.
Is this something you can bring your own Dalmatian to?
Well, we do ask that you contact us because we do vet the Dalmatians to make sure that they're friendly and that they're up on all their shots. But yes, if you have a Dalmatian, please call us or check out our website and contact us, FasneyFireMuseum.com. But it's a great event. It's free. It's a great family event that's both fun and educational.
And what time? Is Saturday the 24th, that's right?
Yeah, Saturday the 24th from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m.
And do you have specific things that happen during the afternoon? Or?
Yeah, we do. We have a puppet show at 11. We have Joshua J. Superstar this year is our entertainer for the year for Dalmatian Day. He does a circus comedy show, and he'll repeat that again at 2 o'clock. Molly the Museum Dog, our resident Dalmatian, will be out doing some agility throughout the day. And we have a couple other surprises going on, too, that you'll have to come to find out about.
How many years have you done Dalmatian Day? And I guess maybe you hadn't done it in the last couple of years?
No, we haven't done it. We've done it virtually because of COVID. But this is the 16th year. The majority of the event is outside, so it's very COVID friendly. The museum itself is 50,000 square feet, so there's lots of room for people inside to spread out. And museum admission is free for the day, too, for this event. So lots to do, lots to see. We welcome everyone. Please come out and enjoy this family-friendly day.
How long has the Firefighters Museum been there in Hudson?
We've been here since 1925, although we were much smaller. We've had several additions put on during the years. So now we're 50,000 square feet. We're the largest fire museum in the U.S., and we have the premier collection of firefighting artifacts in the United States. So something to be very proud of for our local community.
I don't know if anyone's ever explained to me why Hudson is so tied to firefighting museum, to firefighting in general. I guess there's so many stations.
Yeah, we consider Hudson to be America's firematic city for a few reasons. One, we have the oldest chartered active volunteer fire company. That's J.W. Edmonds right here in Hudson. Hudson used to be the site of a fire engine steam manufacturer, Clapp and Jones. They were on the waterfront. Of course, you've got the Fasney Fireman's Home Volunteer Firefighter Retirement Home right here in Hudson. And then you have the museum, which is the largest fire museum in the United States. So for all those reasons, we consider Hudson to be America's firematic city.
And is the museum tied to the home in a certain way?
Yes, FASNY is the founding organization of the museum. Although we are a separate not-for-profit now, we are on their campus, and we are still a sister organization to FASNY. So we are tied to the home, definitely.
And how are things in the firefighting community in general? Stations across the country need more volunteers? Is things better or worse? Has COVID made things better or worse?
Well, fire departments across the United States do need volunteers. Most people are familiar with FDNY, and while FDNY is an amazing organization, 75% of all firefighters in New York State and across the United States are volunteers. So we are always in need of volunteer firefighters for local stations. COVID, of course, has made it more difficult. Fire departments have had more expense because of protective gear. They also have been not able to have their usual fundraisers for a few years. So it's been difficult for fire departments, but, you know, firefighters are a resilient bunch, and they have muddled on, and they will continue to protect our communities as they always have.
And how has the museum done through the COVID pandemic?
It's also been very difficult for not-for-profits, and it's been very difficult for the museum. We had to close for a while, and then even after we reopened, you know, attendance was not great. We've had to, you know, not have our events that we had. We had to have them virtually. So it's been difficult, you know, both financially and just from, you know, visitation-wise for the museum. But, again, we will persevere.
And it seems like you're probably raring to go for Dalmatian Day to come back.
Oh, you betcha. We're just so excited. We've got 31 dogs signed up. So there'll be plenty of Dalmatians for people to meet and greet and learn all about this wonderful breed. And we've got all the games and crafts, as I discussed, but also we've got the Rensselaer County Safety House coming. We have Columbia County Sheriff's coming to do a child ID clinic. So there's going to be so much to do and so much going on. We're really looking forward to it.
Sounds like you're 70 Dalmatians short of a full Disney movie.
Yes. Yeah, we're a bit short, but it's still going to be a great gathering of Dalmatians. And the owners love getting together to, you know, swap stories and compare notes. And the families love meeting the Dalmatians and taking pictures with them and learning about them. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, and I guess the kids love the dogs too, right?
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not very usual to see a Dalmatian. I know when we take Molly the museum dog out and about the city, people are always saying, oh, I never see a Dalmatian. So to see, you know, 30-plus Dalmatians together is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's true. I haven't thought about that. I don't really see Dalmatians that often.
No, you really don't. They're very high-energy dogs. So they require a lot of care, a lot of running, a lot of activity, and they do have particular health issues that not everyone wants to deal with. So, you know, it's not usual to see them out and about. So, yeah, we're very fortunate to have one here at the museum, and we're very fortunate that our Dalmatian owners are so generous with their time.
So this is the big chance. If you don't get to see a Dalmatian often, this is your big chance.
Yes, it is. It is your big chance to come and see them en masse and learn all about them because they're really fascinating dogs.
So give us the information again about Dalmatian Day this Saturday at the Firefighters Museum in Hudson. Do you have a website you can go to?
Yes, absolutely. So it's Dalmatian Day this Saturday, September 24th from 10 to 3 p.m. at the Fasney Museum of Firefighting, located on the Fireman's Home campus, 117 Harry Howard Ave in Hudson. You can go online and learn more about the event, FasneyFireMuseum.com.
All right, that sounds great. Thank you, Jamie, for joining us today. I guess we'll go out with Cruella De Vil from The Replacements.
Perfect. Yeah!
No evil thing will. To see her is to take a sudden chill. Cruella, Cruella De Vil. The glare in her look, the eyes in her stare. Innocent children, you better beware. The world was such a wholesome place until Cruella, Cruella De Vil. First you think she's a devil. At the time is worn away in a shock. You come to realize, I see it in their eyes. She's watching you from under the rock. That vampire bat, the inhuman beast. She ought to be locked up and never released. Like a spider for the kill. That's old Cruella, Cruella De Vil. Yeah.
such a wholesome place until Cruella, Cruella, oh, Cruella, Cruella.
We'll be right back.
That was Sun Ra and his orchestra going on an Egypt strut on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we hear brand new local music from the Field Knots. That is Columbia County-based poet Karen Schomer on vocals and Robert Lloyd providing the music on this song called Snow, a 2022 release.
On shapes. Circles next to circles. Triangles next to squares. This psychological experiment will determine if you're capable of happiness. I'm good at games, but I haven't yet received a reward. Colored flags, small like pennants, snap in February wind. I watch the cold, surviving paper lanterns, mistakenly left outside. Those shrubs could be forsythia. Question mark path leads across the field. Tiny V's and T's float lackadaisical, but not unbeautiful. Patterns inflict themselves. Mother, father, sister, brother, arranged as columns with a candle in between to nudge me away from the regularity that becomes a hiding place in everyday life.
Getting up to the static, getting my attic on channel Z. Getting up to the static, You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. With the last of the state primaries completed September 13th, the focus now turns to the general election on November 8th. But for some states with early voting, casting a ballot may start as soon as this week. Ballotpedia reports that qualifying voters in Minnesota, South Dakota, and Wyoming begin casting ballots on September 23rd for the midterm general election and continue to November 7th. Then on September 29th, Illinois, Michigan, and North Dakota begin, also ending on November 7th. Throughout October, another 35 states allow for some kind of early voting, whether in person or by mail, with most states ending a day or two prior to the traditional election day, this year, November 8th. Kentucky and Oklahoma only have 2 and 3 days, respectively, both ending on November 5th. The U.S. Census Bureau reports that among those living in states that used non-traditional voting methods, turnout increased in 2020 by 7.7% compared with 2016. In Hawaii, 97.6% of voters cast ballots early or by mail in 2020, and voting participation increased by an estimated 17%. To participate in early voting or any voting, you must be registered. If you're not registered, check with your local or county election offices or your state's Secretary of State website for more details. Dates on when your state's early voting begins and ends are available at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.